Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is John Silver, lead recruiter of the Dark Order, and you are listening to All Things Elite.
Welcome to the 77th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwoods, and I am your lovely, lovely, lovely host. And joining with me, as always, is my good friend, my partner in crime, Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, my man, who also, ladies and gentlemen, got his hands on a PS5, so that's coming his way. How you doing, my man?
Man, I am doing great. Thanks God. It's Friday. Of course, we're recording on September 18th, Friday. I was very lucky to order a PS5. Quick story. Me and my friend Jason, like the first night PS5s went on sale, they went on sale without telling anyone. So, I'm literally sitting on a computer because that's what I do for my job. They go on sale and sell out. I never get an email because I signed up for the email on Sony. Signed up for the email on Amazon, right? Amazon's, to me, release was a crap show. Because you never got the email saying that they went on sale. They were literally sold out before you could even know that it was happening, right? Walmart, Best Buy. I'm an Amazon person. I got my PS4 7 years ago in November from Amazon. Just showed up in my house the first day. It was amazing. So I was like, dude, I'm just going to stick with Amazon for PS5. Again, crap show. Nothing went right for them. I feel like a link got out that wasn't supposed to get out. So it might not have been their fault, but it was very annoying. So I went to that page. It was 278 comments on a system, or 278 reviews on a system that hadn't come out, all bitching about the release. It was hilarious. Was hilarious. I'm not happy about how Amazon handled it, but with me, I'm like, let's be real. I'm not a gamer. I play games. I always tell people that. I'm not a gamer. I play games. As in, I don't care about graphics, refresh rate, blah, blah, blah. If it looks pretty, I'm playing the game. It's cool. So, I don't care about that. I just like the games that I like to play. I play Madden. I play Warframe. If you and Sid are playing like some friend style game or something, I'll download it and play that too. But pretty much my tempos are Madden and Warframe. Madden is Madden. It's gonna be Madden. It's always gonna be Madden forever. And this year, if you bought Madden with PS4, you got it free on PS5. Warframe's a free to download game. You know, it's a kind of pay to be elite kind of game. So I don't like. I wasn't like weighing decisions. I'm a PS guy. So there you go. We're on Walmart last night because they actually gave us notice that they were going on sale at 8. We're on the phone. We're both trying to click through. And he gets through and he gets it in his cart. I don't know why I didn't. So I'm just refreshing. Because I was trying to get the digital version. I went over to the hardware version, started refreshing. His cart expires. They then allow me to enter it in a cart, and then I purchase. I don't know if, I'm not saying it was his, but based on how it went with him saying, oh, it's no longer in your cart, and then it being in my cart in like the next few seconds, it was crazy. I didn't tell him it was in my cart because he had just had so many problems purchasing it. I didn't know if my purchase was going to go through. So I just went through, put my card information and pressed purchase. And then he gave me a tracking number and order number. And I was like, I got it. And he was like, you what? I was like, I got it. It went through. I didn't say anything because I saw how much problem you was having. So I didn't think, I thought it was paper. I thought it was just imaginary. Ones and zeros. It wasn't there for real. But it was there. And I got my PS5. Very lucky. I wish you all the best on getting your PS5. But I don't think my stress level is that high. Because I'm at a point in my life where I stress out more about AEW Dynamite tickets than I would about this. Or AEW tickets. More about that. Like, if I don't get an AEW ticket, I'm in a bad mood for the next week.
Well, duh.
Yeah,
that's just even.
Yeah, it's like a PS5. I would have been like, oh, they'll eventually put some more out and I'll buy it. You know, that kind of thing. So there's no finality on the video game system. It's like, this is not all the PS5s they're gonna ever sell.
Exactly.
You know? So just that means I just don't get it day one. But yeah, I liked having a day one because I to show how old I was. PS2, I spent the night at a Best Buy. All night.
Yeah.
It rained at 3:00 in the morning. Spent the night at Best Buy. Was in line. Didn't even have the money. My mom literally had to come up to Best Buy when the thing went on sale with her credit card and buy it. So that was PS2. PS3. PS3 was a little easier. I think I pre-purchased it with GameStop. And then PS4, again, it got shipped directly on Amazon, which was funny because PS4, as far as pre-ordering, was way easier than this shit. I don't know if it was just because it was 2013 and not everybody was on Amazon yet, but it was just like, oh, okay. Oh, we're accepting pre-orders. Press the button. It went through. No, like, lines or a million people trying to get it, and then it just came. I didn't even think about it. It was just that much of a non-story. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But I will say, don't think we forget about you Xbox players, too. Like, good luck on getting your Xbox Series X or Series S, whatever one you prefer.
No.
I actually just got Super Mario All-Stars 3D, like the 3D All-Stars on Switch. I just got it delivered. I got a physical copy of it. I'm very happy. I'm going to play the hell out of it. I also got my cousin's original copy of Sunshine on the GameCube. So I was playing it on the GameCube while I was getting ready to get it on the Switch. So yeah. I'm very happy to have that. And I also have my new PC, which is fucking awesome. And I love it. And it plays games so well. And it runs super fast. And I can do editing and stuff for work like no problem. So it's been a good week for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been a good week. It's a good time for video games in general. This is the next generation console, so this is all amazing. I'm looking forward to playing it. I haven't played an Xbox since...
Xbox 360 was freaking awesome. The One is eh. It's eh, honestly. As someone who owns it, it's eh.
I only had the Xbox. I bought the Xbox, like, 2 weeks after it came out. I played it for 3 days and then sold it to someone.
Oh, Jesus, okay.
Thing with me and Sony, it's the controller.
They haven't changed it at all. I mean, I'll be interested to hear what you think of the new one, since it's actually the most different out of the entire DualShock franchise.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy. It's like, it just feels like a third, like a hand, you know what I mean? It's like, you give me that controller, I've been doing the same thing since 1995. 96? 95 is when it came out, I believe so. So I've been doing the same thing since 95, 96. You can give me any game, just like triangle, circle, you know, X, square. I won't even think about it. I can immediately get into the game because that controller and me are one. So
there you go. I personally prefer the Xbox controllers because I don't know, they feel really nice. I use them for like if I plug a controller into my computer now because they just feel really nice.
I used the original Xbox one and it was too bulky for me.
The original Xbox controller was not great.
Yeah, and that's why I haven't played since that one. Like I haven't picked up an Xbox controller since Xbox.
Yeah, 360 and 1 were better controllers by far. But anyway, off the topic of gaming, this is a podcast about all things Elite. It's AEW. So we got a lot of things to talk about with Dynamite. We also had Late Night Dynamite, which took place after the NBA playoffs. And then we have a preview for next week's Dynamite and some big news as well. But before we get into everything for the show, we want to make sure that you're downloading the show on Google or Apple Podcasts. So please leave a rating and review if you are so inclined to. You can also leave a donation to our podcast provider, Red Circle. Also, if you're listening on Spotify, anything you're listening to on podcast, we would really appreciate a share. Please share us around to everybody who cares about wrestling or AEW or both. And please support us by following us on social media at ATElitePod, at Social Suplex, at SZoomer4, and at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. Now, the big news of the week, which is going to be talked about as well in our Dynamite review, is the fact that the one and only man, Will Hobbs, fucking Will Hobbs is signed with AEW. When I saw him show up and defend Jon Moxley against Ricky Starks and Brian Cage, I popped so hard because I was like, this dude's a killer.
Yeah, he runs on pure willpower. He moves from Oakland to Florida with no guarantee of a contract. Did dark, lost a lot of matches, lost a lot of tag team matches. Apparently hard work paid off. And, you know, and looking like he does as far as the physically imposing man that he is, doesn't hurt. You know, AEW had a big man problem when they originally started. I think Billy Gunn and Luchasaurus were the two largest men in wrestling. Jim Ross said he was going to resolve that issue. Jake Hager appears on Dynamite, and then ever since then, it's been big guy after big guy, Brody Lee, Brian Cage, of course, Lance Archer, now Will Hobbs. They no longer have a big guy problem. I mean, even if you think about it, Mox is, if you look at the rest of the roster, Mox is kind of a big dude. It's just like the physical nature of AEW, and you know, they still have the small guys that can do flippy stuff. They still got the all-around performers, but, you know, people like to see monsters in wrestling. Will Hobbs can be that next-level guy.
Yeah, and I'm more than happy to see what happens when Moxley and Will tag to face off against the new partnership that's being made between Team Taz and Jake the Snake Roberts, monster, Murder Hawk monster. But with that out of the way, let's get into the AEW results for this week. We started off with the AEW World Tag Team Champions FTR taking on Jurassic Express and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. Before FTR even came out to the ring and Jurassic Express was already in the ring, Young Bucks come out. And they walk into the ring just with the biggest bitch faces on that you could possibly imagine for the Young Bucks. Walk in, Mike Posey's in the ring as the referee. He gets super kicked. So that's two referees they've now super kicked. And then they just walk backstage and then throw a stack of $5,000 each at Tony Khan because that's how much they got fined last time. And, I mean, considering how many things the Young Bucks do with just wads of cash, completely within character, but at the same time, watching them slowly and like very much so like make that heel turn has just been so much fun to watch because they've got such attitude and they've got such chips on their shoulder, I think, with trying to make tag team wrestling huge and also slowly kind of falling into the background with the tag division. I think it's done a really great job to like make sure people remember, oh no, these guys are still the best. They're still unbelievably good. But overall, the match between FTR and Jurassic Express was really strong. There was a point where Cash like, goes for a drop kick, I want to say on Jungle Boy, and then he misses it, and then, his feet land on the rope, top ropes, and then he, like, falls backwards and nearly lands on his neck. That scared the shit out of me. I thought Cash literally got hurt, but overall, after Luchasaurus came in and just started wrecking shop, they then get Luchasaurus outside the ring. He tries to dive onto Dax, I believe, and he misses, flies into the crowd, and then by the time Luchasaurus recovers, Jungle Boy then gets caught as he connects a sunset flip on Dax, but then Cash yanks him and throws him into the ropes, hold down by as well Tully Blanchard, and then Jungle Boy gets pinned because of that assist. So I was mistaken. It was very much Cash who was on the outside who dodged Jurassic Express. I mean, Luchasaurus. My apologies. But it was a really nice finish, a really nice sneaky undercut finish by FTR to continue to reign their dominance on the tag division. Still undefeated. I believe they're 9-0 at this point in time. And also, I will mention too, when the Young Bucks went backstage and FTR was just yucking it up as Young Bucks walked backstage and just walked away and just mugging it for the camera and just giving them so much shit. And it was absolutely great. Really, really strong opener for the show, I think. But Floyd, your thoughts?
So FTR has now transformed and transitioned into full heel 80s tag team. They have been slowly making their transition over months. They started, they came in, and they worked the house style a little faster, a little bit. And then they slowly started showing that other side of them. And then, of course, they won the titles. And they won the titles fairly, you know, in fair and square. Two spike pile drivers. It was rarely fair. Tully didn't get involved. But now that they've become champions and they have something to protect, something to defend, they are full-on heel 80s tag team. In this match, it was pure cutting off the ring. People tended to like this show, like this match better. Some people tend to like this match better than the one at All Out. I disagree. Thought this was good, but this was straight out of the 80s playbook with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus playing the Rock and Roll Express to the Midnight Express. But it was actually more Brainbuster style because they were working a limb and cutting off the ring. So it was great. And then the roll up and not winning clean, that's what heels do. Tully's more involved. He seems like Tully's really into this whole gimmick. He seems a lot more natural than he does with Sean Spears. Because you know what? It's fun when you're a manager of a winning team as opposed to a guy that he beats all the people that are, you know, lower than him. But whenever he gets on Dynamite, he pretty much loses. So it's a... It just seems like it's a completely gelled tag team, and I love FTR's the shitty heels. I thought Jungle Boy, he's one of the best at taking heat and making you feel sorry for him. And you know, in a time where a lot of people don't feel sorry for people, Jungle Boy makes you feel that way, and that's awesome. And Luchasaurus is one of the best hot tags in wrestling. So
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it was great. Great match. I think did everything it was supposed to do, and it fully transitioned to FTR into the role that they will be playing for the rest of their title reign.
Yeah. After this, we cut backstage to Alex Marvez, who was with Private Party. Matt Hardy was on the concrete floor, very much in pain, and they were talking about a game plan, and then apparently then that's when he gets laid out. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager come up and just like, oh, is he okay? Is he going to be okay, or are you going to have to maybe amputate his leg? And then just giggling to each other, Hager and Jericho walk away, leading into their match that they would have later tonight. Next up, we had SCU's Frankie Kazarian versus Hangman Adam Page. Kenny Omega joined the commentary team, which, yes, because the way that Kenny Omega has been like moving away from Hangman has been and moving away from tag team wrestling, and the way it's so serendipitous, because the same way that Hangman wanted to distance himself away from the elite is the same thing that Kenny Omega is doing with trying to distance himself from Hangman and distance himself from tag team wrestling, but they're continuously pulled back in. But now Hangman is just straight up just burned every bridge that there possibly could be. So now he's just in the singles competition and by himself. But Kenny very much wants to be by himself and go on a singles run, but he's still continuing to talk about tag team wrestling and Hangman Adam Page. But in terms of the match itself, Frankie's great. Hangman's great. It was just a really good singles match. I had anything bad to say. These guys are both unbelievably good. They've showcased their talents on AEW multiple times. They just like laid each other out with some strong shots, some great, there was an amazing DDT that Frankie hit on Adam Page, and he just continued to just these back and forth action until the buckshot lariat was hit on Frankie, and then as Kenny Omega is questioned once again about like tag team wrestling, he's just like, you know what, I'm good, have a good night guys, I'm heading out, and then he doesn't congratulate him, and by the time that Hangman turns around, Kenny is gone, and he was totally expecting him to come in. But I mean, the heel stuff that's happening with the Elite has just been nothing but entertaining, and I'm loving every second of it. But this match was really, really strong, and I love the inclusion of having Frankie take on these singles competitions on Dynamite, because he's still so freaking good. Like, people comment on how good Christopher Daniels is at his age. Frankie Kazarian is so freaking good. But Floyd, what do you think?
All right, so let me start at the beginning. That's a nice way of you putting Kenny's departure from the tag team division. It's making it seem like it was his choice to leave. How I say is FTR retired Kenny from tag team wrestling. FTR on this day stands for Force the Retirement of Kenny Omega. He realized he couldn't measure up in the tag team division, because real tag teams are there now. So, sayonara. He did the business decision. He didn't want to keep getting beat up by FTR, so it made sense. He says, oh, I'll be singles. That's a little bit easier. So, he's out there watching Hangman, who, you know, you always have that person that thinks, you know, hope, yeah, maybe if we can get it together, you know, get back together. Hangman's the jilted girlfriend in this situation that wants to get back in a relationship. So he's wrestling Frankie, because Kenny basically said, I'm not tagging with you no more. Because he doesn't want to lose to FTR again. Fear. It's cool. You're supposed to fear the revelation. I get that. So you get in there, and you got Hangman and Frankie. The first matches I remember Hangman in, he was kind of the young boy in ROH, and I think he had just joined the Bullet Club. And him and a Hangman were having a lot of back and forth. And they had about three or four matches, including some type of death match. And their matches were always amazing. So when I heard that this match was going to be on AEW, I already knew these dudes had amazing chemistry. It came through in the match. I think this was the second week in a row they had a really solid to very good singles match. Last week it was Brody Lee and Dustin Rhodes, and then you had Hangman and Frankie Kazarian come out, and they just had a professional wrestling match. It was just an amazing professional wrestling match. It would fit on any card. It was just like, they just wanted to win. It didn't have to need a title on the stakes. It didn't need them to hate each other. It was just two guys that wanted to win. They put on an amazing match. Buckshot Lariat for the win. He looks back, and Kenny's gone. He's like, you know what? I understood this. I understood why he did it, because, you know, Kenny didn't want to leave hope in Hangman's eyes of them getting back in the tag team division, because, of course, Kenny just doesn't want to lose again. So I get it. Kenny is running away from the tag team division because he's scared of it, and Hangman's trying to bring him back. And the only way to resolve this is a V-trigger to the face. So there you go.
There you go.
That's how I see that whole segment. Just, it was all about the FTR. Again, another FTR segment. They didn't even have to be there. That's how great they are.
I mean, yeah, you'll sing their praises any chances you get. But after this, we had MJF with Wardlow at his side taking on Sean Dean. 2 seconds into the match, pokes him in the eyes. MJF then quickly hits the Salt of the Earth armbar, and then he taps out. Match lasted, I believe, 6 seconds. I think it was their shortest match they've had on Dynamite since they've started on TNT. Then MJF goes on the microphone and talks about how he's an honest man and that he's pretty sure that Mox cheated and he should still be undefeated right now and be the AEW World Champion because he used an illegal move. And even though the ref's back was turned, he still used an illegal move. So in a sense, he's right. The fact that the move was banned in the first place is bullshit anyway. But of course, MJF's never going to bring that up. But he then claims, well, just demands, in fact, that he wants to be known as the undefeated, uncrowned, undisputed AEW World Champion of All Elite Wrestling. Forces Justin Roberts to do it. And then, after that, he just quickly just cuts another great promo and talks about how he's kind of a lone wolf and there's just a new group or a new stable or a new faction every week here. But he says if he decides to pick a group, if he decides to not to, it doesn't matter because in the end, he's still better than you and you know it. I mean, it's just a really fucking good promo. MJF is continuously cutting great promos and just being such a detestable heel. Coming off of a big, big loss, MJF can still bounces back and continues to be detestable, continues to be at the top of his game, and it's a great way to continue MJF's tenure in AEW after losing his first AEW World title shot.
Great way of keeping him relevant after a loss. It was like MJF is the future of the company, so he has to stay on top. He was great in a faction in MLW. I think it was called the Dynasty, like Richard Holiday. So I could see him fitting into a faction well. I tweeted out from my personal Twitter that, you know, Cody's gone. He's elevating AEW in other ways as far as becoming a super TV star. Carrying TV shows. I get that. Cody has to go do what Cody has to do. So, with that being said, it looks like FTR, you know, they got that finger and they got that one finger down and they're throwing up three. And it feels like it's more natural, you know, not to hold that finger down and, you know, throw up four.
Oh, so, my God. Imagine.
Yeah, so, I'm just saying. The horsemen that I grew up in the 80s, it was four guys that were amazing wrestlers that could talk you into the building and that can make you hate them. So, if you're asking me what group together would fit into that mold, you put MJF with FTR, three guys, amazing promos. Tully as the manager, another amazing promo, throwing up that four. I mean, if you want to throw Shawn Spears in there, I would not get mad because, you know, in old world, it was like you could put four stars together. But in new wrestling, you know, you really don't want to do that because somebody has to get pinned. So, you know, you want to have Shawn Spears in there as the enforcer, quote unquote, enforcer slash pin eater. I could see that. I mean, if I'm looking at the round of groups in AEW. This is not just to talk about FTR more. This is me taking my FTR love away and saying, you look at the people and who's left in the company right now. Does he really fit with anyone else?
Considering the type of old school heel that he is, it genuinely fits so well.
Exactly. So understand, I do love FTR, again, but this is me taking away my FTR love, looking at it as impartial as possible. It's the only group that fits his aesthetic.
Yeah. After this, we had another segment, this time with Eddie Kingston, Penta El Zero M, Rey Fénix, Butcher and the Blade. So Kingston just had 3 points to make in this promo. He says, number one, never lost the Battle Royal. Look up the rules. We very much know that's the case. He also said that last week. Number two, they're a family. We're not a stable. We're not a faction. A family is what they are. You sound like Vin Diesel, but that's
A Family of Violence. He made sure to click because I think that's going to be
Family of Violence, Violence and Agents of Chaos is what he said.
I think Family of Violence might end up being their name, but
that makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Kingston then decided, Butcher and Blade, go find some victims, and they go out and they attack Brian Pillman Jr. and a couple other guys that I couldn't tell who they were, but. They just started beating the shit out of some baby faces that were in the crowd. And then he says the third point, Blade, since we got all of us together, it's time for you to get your house in order. And then he nods, and then JR is just like, the hell does that mean? So, Floyd, any ideas of what exactly that point means?
Oh, yes. Again, personal Twitter. You can follow me at Floyd Johnson Jr. Not trying to plug myself, but if you like want to hear my thoughts outside of the show, honestly, that's where I tweet from. The Blade's gonna kill QT, and I'm sorry, because as most people don't know, or some people do know, it's not a secret. Allie, who is QT's girlfriend, is the Blade's wife, her real life wife, shoot wife, whatever you want to say, played on TV, wife. So, he said, you got to get your house in order. Yeah. So, QT's going to die. And RIP QT. You know, great.
That's what you get for simping.
Let me just tell you. You know, I'm sorry. If I'm dating a chick and she says the last guy I dated is The Blade. That's his name. He doesn't go by a real name. He just goes by The Blade. I'm going to have to pass on that relationship.
I'm not like Scott Pilgrim, who hears, I have seven evil exes you have to fight, and he's like, sure.
Yeah, no.
Like, very much not that personality with me. It's like, I have my ex is named Blade, The Blade.
The Blade.
We'll see other people.
Best friends is The Butcher. What's up. I'm just like, hey, if you want to meet up online and play some PS4 together, we can have that kind of relationship.
Yeah,
but ain't nobody ever seeing us together.
Let's do something.
Yeah, I was like, ain't nobody ever seeing us together because I'm not trying to die. So, RIP QT, you had a good run.
There you go.
Yeah, because not only is the Blade coming, he has a big guy named The Butcher, and then he just hooked up with two crazy luchas. So, I don't see your chances going that well, you know?
There you go. We then had Private Party versus Inner Circle's Demo God Chris Jericho and Jake Hager. And this match was all right. I will say, for me, it was probably the weakest part on the show. And it's just because of the fact that I would prefer Jericho and Hager not to be doing this. I would prefer them not to be yet another. Now the Inner Circle has two tag teams, and Sammy's off doing God knows what anymore. So it was a decent match. I enjoyed Private Party. I mean, Chris Jericho and Jake Hager are still great, but I just the idea of it, of just having this be a tag team and getting a mega push for the tag team titles, I'd rather not. I just personally would rather not. It's the one decision regarding the tag team division, which I was like, maybe let's back up and not go down this road. Because honestly, with how many tag teams you have, you should just go a different route with this. It just makes the most sense. But overall, Chris Jericho and Jake Hager got the win. And then after the match was over, the Walls of Jericho was placed on Cassidy afterwards. Then Mark Quinn came and knocked him out with a Pele kick, and then Jericho and Jake Hager retreated. This feud will very much continue in the future, but I've said my thoughts on it, and it's very much kind of I'd rather not with this, and it's not my favorite thing right now. But Floyd, any differing thoughts?
I 100% agree with it not being my thing, but if you're trying to elevate the tag division, you're trying to make the tag division seem as important as the world title, you put Jericho in an angle for it. You make it something Jericho desires. That elevates in the eyes of the TV audience that might not know who FTR is, like, all the way, might not really care about, other tag teams. One thing about ratings on this show is people care about Jericho. They want Jericho involved. So Jericho being in the tag team division elevates it and makes more people care. Do I like it? No. Because what's the point of having a tag team in your gang if you're then just going to keep forming tag teams with other people from the gang?
Which especially is, when you've already tagged with one of the singles members in the gang.
And had a name! You were the LaceX Gods!
Yeah, and you already
gods.
Had a team and t-shirts made for it.
Yeah, you're the LaceX Gods. It just seems like it doesn't make any sense. But focusing on the positive, Chris Jericho, after the match is the positive that I will focus on. Mark Quinn kicks Chris Jericho in the head. So you know what that means. Chris Jericho's about to make Mark Quinn famous. Now, I think everyone in the company sees Mark Quinn as one of the future of the company. I think he's one of those people that, you know, he's going to be in the tag team division. Private Party eventually is going to get all the way over and be a top tag team in the future. But when he takes that next step, when Isaiah Cassidy.
Marty Jannetty.
Yeah. When he Shawn Michaels, Isaiah Cassidy, and kicks him, I think he's going to be the guy that they push as the future of the company. He's such a good all-around performer. He has all the tools. He has a look to go into the future. Great thing is, black don't crack. So, you know, you got a 10, 15-year window before he starts to age. So that's another good thing. So Mark Quinn, I think, is the future. I think he would be And it's funny because a big problem 6 months ago was push black singles wrestlers. That was one. So now you got Scorpio Sky, kind of the lead one, and everybody's waiting on him to go to the next level. They got Mark Quinn kind of in that second position, him and Isaiah Cassidy as a tag team, and then they signed Will Hobbs. So they seem to be addressing it. It's just going to be kind of a slower burn, which is awesome. And now you're going to probably get a Mark Quinn Jericho match whenever it's announced. And, you know, people are going to see what Mark Quinn does, because that's what something people don't realize about Jericho. In his matches, he's really good at focusing on what the other guy's good at and letting them star. I think Mark Quinn had a bit of a star-making performance with Cody. I think Jericho will take it to that next level.
Yeah, honestly, I agree with that. I think Mark Quinn did show himself in the TNT Open Challenge. I am excited to see more of him in singles-wise, and the fact that they might be going down this road is interesting to me because I love this idea, and I think I'm not sure yet. I think I still need to see a little bit more, and I think him facing off against Jericho in this kind of feud will be really interesting to watch, but I will be excited to see more of this going down the line. After this match, we had Ivelisse, accompanied by Diamante, versus the NWA Women's World Champion Thunder Rosa with the NWA World title on the line. I also loved how Ivelisse and Diamante came out with their Women's Tag World Cup medals. I thought that was super cool. And Sheeta was on ringside watching this match as well. And these two beat the shit out of each other. Like, I was very surprised at just how vicious some of the strikes in this match was. There was a really good knee strike by Ivelisse when Diamante was just distracting Thunder Rosa, and they just beat the hell out of each other. I thought the Tombstone Piledriver to win the match by Thunder Rosa was really, really strong as well. I was really looking forward to this match, and it delivered on every aspect. Afterwards, Diamante jumped Thunder Rosa, and then they started going after her. And then Hikaru Shida came to the aid of Thunder Rosa, knocked out Diamante and Ivelisse, and just started kicking them out of the ring. And then they just had a little show of respect in the ring, which is really, really awesome. And yeah, I was super happy with how this match turned out, because I had high hopes with it, especially considering it was the first time the NWA championship was actually represented in a legitimate title match, which I think is really freaking cool. But Floyd, thoughts on Ivelisse in Thunder Rosa?
Okay, so this match I was looking forward to. I've become a big I've been a big fan of Thunder Rosa, but more and more every time I see, she's just like an amazing professional wrestler. She's very physical. She has a way of blending in professional wrestling and her MMA talents because, you know, she's a fighter too. And I just think it's great. So Ivelisse, her and Ivelisse have worked together before. So I'm like, man, this is going to be great. It did not disappoint. I was like, man, this looks like a fight. And this is like one of the first women's, you know, matches where I felt like it was a fight. You know, I've seen good wrestling matches in the women's division. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this one felt like a fight. It felt like they were going after each other. And then, of course, Thunder Rosa had to win. We then find out, now we got to add some color from the internet, that apparently, according to Uncle Dave Meltzer, Ivelisse and Thunder Rosa, Ivelisse, they didn't really get along backstage, and they were throwing real shots. And, you know, they and Thunder Rosa, again, professional cage fighter. She does this. So she basically put Ivelisse in her place, and then they went back to being professionals, and then they did the match, and then they did the jumping. I don't know how much of this is true. This is rumors and innuendo speculation. I tend to trust Dave Meltzer, but, you know, he's even wrong sometimes. If that's the case, every match should be a shoot. Because this was the best thing I've ever seen on as far as women's matches in AEW. It was like, if they were shooting on each other, she needs to shoot on everybody that they were doing going forward. That's the, like, I'm like, I'm not falling into the, oh my god, and like, shit, the person they started, they wrestled, and the person that won the match was supposed to win. That's all I care about. I mean, Ivelisse took the three. She was professional in that way. Thunder Rosa, if this was them going off script, it was like the best thing for the match.
I will say, like you said, like every match should be a shoot. So then my mind was like, let's go even further with that. Let's have them fight in a dusty ass fucking garage or some shit with no ring ropes, people surrounding it, slamming it, and they're shoot fighting. And then we have girls dancing in the corner for no fucking reason except for the fact that we want to pop a rating.
This came off more real than anything that I've seen in that scenario that you brought up. It was just like, it was a fight. And I mean, that's what you want wrestling to be, a simulated fight. I don't want every match to be like this. But when it comes to the women's division, where like a lot of people, you know, are still learning, are developing as performers, it was just like, okay, this was different. It just looked different than anything you've seen on AEW as far as in the women's division. And there was a reason that it did. So, like I said, I don't know if this is true or not or whatever. Because in my mind, you know, you start, no matter what, you watch wrestling, you fantasy book, you look ahead. And I was like, okay, I kind of saw Diamante jumping in, jumping Thunder Rosa, and then Sheeta making the save. I saw that coming. Because in my fantasy booking is next week when they're tagged up. They Thunder Rosa, Ivelisse, and Diamante team up and then beat up Sheeta. That's how I see it going. Cause hey, but maybe that won't happen. And then you can use that to elevate. Maybe Ty Conti comes out and tries to help Sheeta, and it just, you know, there's a whole lot of strings to pull here. But whatever, that's how I saw it coming. I'm just saying what I saw before the match. That was previous. But then after the match, and it was just like, and then I found out it was hard hitting. I was like, good lord, this is sometimes where I want kayfabe to be kayfabe. Because it was a really bomb-ass match. I didn't need to know the other part. But
sure,
if you're on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and you're in groups, you're going to find out the other part. I actually,
well, also
a subscriber to one. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, though, but, like, honestly, like, that's just the case with, like, any good feud or good match normally. If there's actual real-life issues in the match, like, going into it, like, or going into the feud, like, that's normally going to add to your feud or add to your match. I mean, like, I think that's the whole reason why the feud between Edge and Matt Hardy is still remembered today, because it was, like, pretty fucking real. With just everything that was going on in both of those guys' lives and the person that was in the middle of it all. And, like, you look at, like, stuff like, just, like, stuff between, like, Hunter and Chris Jericho, and, like, how they didn't like each other, like, in the mid-2000s, and they still had such good chemistry in the ring and put on great matches. Like, even if you have a distaste for somebody, you can still put on, like, great matches, even especially if there's real shit behind that. Like, you get a little bit of, like, actual, like, anger, and, like, you give it to each other. Like, that adds to your match so much.
Yeah, it's called being a professional. That's what it's called, definitely, being a professional wrestler. It's like, and like I said, even if they threw a few shots at each other and really hit each other in the face and got into it a little bit, the rest of the match looked like a wrestling match. So, it didn't look like, you know, Thunder Rosa didn't start shooting on her after she got the three or anything. It was just, looked like they were performing. There's a gif going around where Ivelisse gets put in a full Nelson and she looks uninterested. I'm just like, I mean, you can, if you watch wrestling enough, you can find something in how someone's reaction is every now and then. I know Ivelisse has had not the best reputation as far as having the best attitude, but I don't know. I think a lot of people are reaching, but again, Dave Meltzer said it, so a lot of people believe it's true. I am one of those people that would tend to believe it's true, but I just think if there was real beef, you would know more from more people.
Sure.
Yeah.
After this, we had a segment with Miro backstage. He was bench pressing like crazy while Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford were watching on, and Kip Sabian was building up the whole wedding and him being the best man, and then Miro's just like, I want to get in the ring. Like, I want to. And he's like, well, we got something else before we get into the ring. We got the bachelor party, man. And we got the whole wedding to deal with. And you're the best man. And then he's like, you invited me to be your best man, but I am the best man. So the best man provides the best bachelor party. So funny little segment. It was all right. Just a little transition. Then did you have something to say on this one?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, he said at some point, when are you going to let me smash somebody? Or destroy somebody, or he said something, some word about that brings on the line the color of, you know, Miro being Miro. So I do love that. It's like, you know, Kip brought him in, and he's kind of a pit bull right now on a leash, but eventually he's going to let him go.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be so good when he does, too. But then after this, we had Lance Archer and Jake the Snake Roberts come down to the ring, and then Lance, as he's standing in the ring, has Jake the Snake talking about how he's not happy, but they need tag team partners. So if he's willing to lay in the bed with the devil, I just as soon lay in bed with the Tasmanian devil. So then he calls out Taz and the Taz team to come out. Archer and Roberts come down. Taz and Archer come down to the ring, and they talked about it. And there's a business decision of how they're doing a trio of Absolute Ricky Starks, the Machine Brian Cage, and the Murder Hawk Monster, who's currently the number one contender for the AEW World title. And they're going to be teaming. And then the deal is, if when Lance Archer destroys Jon Moxley and takes the AEW title, the first title shot is going to Brian Cage. And then they talked about how he's going to come down and on October 14th, and Murder Hawk Monster is going to knock that punk-ass Jon Moxley down. He also went after Eddie Kingston about him crying and whining about not going over the top rope. And then he had a great line: the monster and the machine are going to go Godzilla on the Daily's Place. As an Eminem fan, I appreciate the Godzilla line. And either way, Jon Moxley then comes out, and then right before he's about to talk, he gets jumped by Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. And then that's when Will Hobbs runs in with the steel chair and then destroys Brian Cage. It's a hell of a debut. And then Jon Moxley just bills the hell out of Will Hobbs. And he just talks about Oakland's most violent Will Hobbs. He also said he's going to need a third partner, so he's going to call in the services of your favorite wrestler, Taz. And then Darby Allin will be joining that team, and it will be a six-man tag match next week between Darby Allin, Will Hobbs, and Jon Moxley versus Murderhawk Monster Lance Archer, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks.
So, I have a lot to point out on this group.
There's a lot in this segment.
A lot in this segment. First of all, the pure genius. When people say wrestling booking is not hard, I always call bullshit. I think it's very hard. But I gotta give a shout out to the whole idea of WWE. I will use them as an example because I hate their six-man matches. They would just throw these three men together with no real explanation. They explained why these three men are working together. That was perfect. Common enemy. Enemy of my enemy is my friend. I love it. Then Mark comes out, and it's funny because you see Ricky Stark, in the hoodie in the back, and they jump him, and then Will Hobbs comes. First thing, I wish they wouldn't announce Will Hobbs signing before the show. I wish Will Hobbs, again, these are little points, just me as a wrestling fan, Will Hobbs just shows up. Just think of Hobbs, you don't know he signs, he just shows up, starts beating the crap out of him, and then you find out after the show, Will Hobbs signs with AEW. Awesome. I just think that's an awesome moment. They kind of let the information out beforehand. I imagine Tony Khan is exponentially smarter than I am, so I know there's a reason for that. So I will just leave it at that. Darby Allin, I love, you know, Mox always leans more into the world of reality. He didn't even talk to Darby Allin before. He said, him asking Darby to be his partner happened on national TV. He said, get your ass on the plane and get down to Jacksonville. We got to fight. And that was just kind of cool. It was just a different. He's like, I didn't even talk to him before. It's like, no, it was just like, dude, I'm asking you right now. Get your ass out here and wrestle. I thought that was really cool, really raw, added to the realism of the moment. And next week, you got Mox giving a rub to Hobbs by being in the match, and Allin against those guys. Like, Cage and Archer literally want to fight each other, but they're going to be on the tag team because they know they got bigger goals, because they want to, when they fight, they want it to be for the world title. And that's going to be amazing. I just thought this segment was kind of perfect. Like, I think this is one of the better, if not best, non-wrestling segments they've ever done. Just because it never got boring. They got Jake under control, so he didn't drone on too long. Taz said exactly what he wanted, made what he wanted. You know, we want a title shot, clear. The reason for the group being together. Mox comes out looking tough. He gets Will Hobbs, you know, the rub, and kind of gets him over. Oakland's most violent. Like, dude, okay, he should be Oakland's most violent, Will Hobbs, when he comes out every time now. He just gave him the nickname. And then Darby, dude, I know you're always down for a fight. I didn't even have to call you first. Get your ass to Jacksonville. We're about to beat these dudes up. I just thought it was just a perfect segment.
It was really great, honestly. We then had the main event, the parking lot brawl between Santana and Ortiz versus best friends Trent and Chuck Taylor. First off, Santana and Ortiz had their faces painted just like in the 95 film Dead Presidents.
Yes. Which,
there you go, represent the Bronx. There you go. And then they holy shit, this match, they beat the shit out of each other. Going through some of the spots, yeah, it was a fucking fight. I mean, there was a point, Santana gets ran into the driver's side mirror of a car, and then, like, Trent gets his head slammed on the hood of a car onto Ortiz, and just flipping sentons off of the roof of a car onto the hood. There's a point where there's like steel batons, bats, all this kind of stuff. Sledgehammer gets thrown through the car windshield. Ortiz suplexes Trent onto the roof of a car, and he just gets glass all into his back. And then the best spot of all was just Orange Cassidy being in the trunk of one of the cars, jumping out of it, and then you hitting the orange punch on Santana. And just, Jesus Christ. Then the finish of just Chuck hits Santana with a pile driver on the hood of a car, and then Trent hits him through this plywood that's set onto a truck bed, and then just goes through the bed, through the plywood onto the truck bed. And that's how the pin was happening. I mean, this got 5 stars for a reason. Holy shit, this was carnage, and what a way to finish off Dynamite. It was just such a good, just brawl. And like, considering how much AEW prides itself on their wrestling, they've shown multiple times that they're good at gimmick matches, and they're good at just, like, not even death matches, but just really extreme no holds barred matches, and this was so damn good. And I mean, it was my favorite part of the show, the like no questions asked, and it was just an amazing way to cap off this feud, an amazing way to cap off Dynamite. And then Trent's mom Sue pulls up in her minivan, I assume a brand new one since that last one was pretty messed up. And then right as they leave, Sue flips off Santana and Ortiz. Fucking yes. Yes, queen. Slay. Now, Floyd, thoughts on this hell of a main event?
Yes, queen, slay? Okay, that's how we're doing this? Okay, I got you.
Yes,
I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even in her, even in whatever age she is, she's slaying.
All right, so JR said this was the best street fight he's ever called. And, yeah, I mean, hey, 5 stars. I get it. I will say this is not even the best street fight I've ever seen Proud and Powerful in. They were in a couple in Impact with Lucha Bros and then one with the original LAX. They're amazing at this. So when they did this, I was expecting exactly what I got. It was hard hitting. It was real. Mick Foley had them literally made a video to tell them how good they did and how safe. And he said he couldn't have done it better. The hardcore legend Mick Foley said he couldn't have done it better. As far as the match, it was just as physical. I think you went over most of the highlights. Only thing I didn't hear. So Proud and Powerful, just like the heels in most of these fights, was about to go a little too far. They had a steel pipe, and he was about to bash someone's head in. And out from the back comes Orange Cassidy.
Yep.
Orange Cassidy, and he gives them the Superman punch, but he had a chain wrapped around his fist. Again, Orange Cassidy showing the more violent side of him, which I like. And then we get the finish that you explained. It was a perfect match. I honestly, there are matches where I watch, and I can truly say there's no loser. There was no loser in this match. Best Friend got the pin, and they'll probably get elevated, maybe to go against FTR in the future. But Best Friend got the pin, but there was literally no winner in this match. I mean, loser in this match, because Santana Ortiz elevated themselves to wherever they want to be. And then I found myself asking after this point of contention, why do they need Jericho and Hager?
I was going to say, like, if there was any part of the Inner Circle that would break off first. I in my mind, I was like, it's either Sammy or Proud and Powerful, and I'm leaning more towards them. Honestly, it seems like they could just be vicious dogs and just
You can barely tell that they're in an Inner Circle. You can barely tell they're in an Inner Circle at this point. You're in a street fight, which there is no rules. You literally, they have Orange Cassidy, 3. You have 3 other professional wrestlers, 5. You should always have the numbers advantage, and you lose out to the numbers advantage. How does that happen? I'm like, I can write the promo for them of them leaving in a circle, because it's like, we got with you because of the numbers advantage. But I can honestly say, Proud and Powerful main evented a Dynamite, like, as a tag team. Tag team wrestling main evented a Dynamite. You don't understand how big that is for me. That is like perfect. This was an A show. I honestly, and this is the best compliment I can get, I think this is the best non-Cody show of Dynamite that they've ever produced. From top to bottom. I mean, from top to bottom. Like, even that one low part, the Jericho tag match, if you call it a low, was still a good tag team match. But as far as in-ring performance, wrestling performances, this might have been their best show ever.
Yeah, not to mention just all the story threads that are being thrown in, like, in almost every single segment and every single match. Like, every match, like, continued on a story in different ways. So, you got a great pop. I mean, we'll mention this too, like, the ratings wise, you got 886,000 viewers over NXT's 689,000. I believe I also saw a tweet that on Wednesday nights, it was number one in the 18 to something demographic. It was number one in cable in that demographic, which on Wednesday, which is fucking awesome. And that's a non-Cody episode. So, I
think they have done a good job of making it appointment viewing. The difference between this and the other company that they're often compared to is that this is their only show. This is their main show. But this is their only nationally televised show. This is the focus of their week. A lot of their roster isn't on the show because this is, you know, the highlight. There's only a certain amount of spots and they're trying to put on their best programming as opposed to the other people that it's three. They have three shows. Again, this one feels like appointment viewing, you know. I like tonight, I'm going to watch the Lakers game. I'll come back to SmackDown later. You know, it's just, I don't feel like I'm going to miss anything. But if you watch Dynamite an hour late, literally be off social media because that's all everyone's talking about. Every aspect, every good line, that's all that's being said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, even with NXT too, like, I love NXT, but like, I've still consistently, like mostly, like, skimmed highlights and then watched the takeovers live. That's just how I've been with NXT for the longest time. And even more so recently, just with some certain decisions that they've made. But it's still, like, I can't miss Dynamite live. It pains me to miss it live because every time, like, I'm normally rewarded for sticking with it. So that's what you want to do when you're building a new show, when you're building a brand, and when you're building a company, is you want to reward your fans for sticking it out for the long run, because when you do, they love you even more. And AEW has realized that, and they've done so well at it.
Yeah. But
yeah, and that's all we have for AEW Dynamite for this week, and we're going to go into the preview for next week's Dynamite. We'll also talk about the late night Dynamite preview that happened on Tuesday after the NBA.
It hasn't happened yet.
Well, yeah, not yet. Yeah. That's going to happen. That's Freudian slip again. I'm sorry. I'm quite tired. Work has sort of thrown me off my sleep schedule, and I'm going to get accustomed to it very soon. But we have the late night Dynamite preview Tuesday night after the NBA that's coming up. That hasn't happened, and Chris Jericho will be on commentary for that. But before we get into those previews, I want to let you guys know that support for All Things Elite is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tool for your grooming experience. And if you go and make an order and use the code SUPLEX, you'll get 20% off that order, and you'll get free shipping off that order. Not one or the other, not none of them. That code is very much getting you both 20% off and free shipping. And Floyd can attest to the power of Manscaped and how strong their products truly are.
Well, I hope you've been listening to the show over the last, 6 weeks or whatever we've been doing this. I'm just going to tell you, if this is something that you're interested in, you're on the fence about, this is the time to try it with the discount. I am telling you, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I mean, having clean balls, having a groomed area, what is the bad point? I want you to give Manscaped a shot. If you don't like it, you can call me out. You can call me out on Twitter, say I'm some kind of shyster. But I don't think that's the plan. I think you're going to like it, and then you're going to tweet and tag me in Manscaped and tell me how good your experience is. So go ahead and throw the code in there, SUPLEX. Get to 20% off free shipping. Thank me later.
Yes, and thank you, Manscaped, for sponsoring the podcast. Going into our preview for Late Night Dynamite on Tuesday, we have Scorpio Sky taking on Ben Carter, continuing his push to be involved in more singles competition. We have the reigniting of Brandi versus Anna Jay after what happened between Cody and the Dark Order. And then we have Matt Sydal taking on Shawn Spears, which honestly, I'm like leaning towards Brandi and Anna Jay and Matt Sydal and Shawn Spears as the matches I'm looking the most forward to. Obviously, Matt Sydal has been like under a little bit of criticism for his debut because of the botch that occurred. But I believe this is the point where Matt is going to be showcasing just how good he really is. And I'm 100% excited to see how this goes on. But overall, for the late night Dynamite preview. Any thoughts on this, Floyd?
Yes, they have really done well building the Brandi and Anna Jay rivalry. Aunt Brandi was on Dark this week, and she was wrestling, I believe, Red Velvet, and then she choked her out. She used a rear naked choke, the same thing Anna Jay did to Brandi, with Anna Jay watching to let her know that she can do it too. That was awesome. Scorpio Sky. Ben Carter is one of my favorite indie wrestlers. I've seen him on GCW like twice, and then I've seen him in a match. I've seen him in a match on Dark last week. The dude is freaking amazing. He can just do things. You know, he fits right into the aesthetic. I think AEW should sign him so he does not sign anywhere else, because I think he's going to get a contract fairly soon, because that's how good the guy is. Matt Sydal versus Shawn Spears. I'm just adding this little thing from BTE. They explained what happened with Matt Sydal. Matt Sydal got in. He was the Joker. He was the Joker in the tournament, and that made he was the Joker in the Battle Royal, and that made Michael Nakazawa jealous, and they told Michael Nakazawa to make an impact, and he did. He put baby oil on the turnbuckle, so Matt Sydal went to do a shooting star, and that's why he slipped. I can't believe it. He had never slipped.
I love the excuses they make.
That was perfect retconning. Like, you could have given me like 6 months, and I wouldn't have thought of that. That was just perfect. Perfect. They went completely into it. They started comparing him to Shockmaster, and yes, they said his character was ruined. They didn't watch the rest of the show. Michael Nakazawa was like, "You see what I did?" And they got so mad at him. He's like, "You could have killed him." And it was hilarious and perfect. They took something funny and made it even funnier. So yeah,
they capitalized on it too, just to make it like just put it in the mythos, and also at the same time just like make sure people remember, no, Matt Sydal is going to be amazing, and I think this match will showcase how good he is and how well of a get this was for AEW.
And this is perfect. You're going to have it on after the NBA. I don't know about a lot of people. I'm watching the NBA, right? The game ends. I start playing on my phone. I don't turn the channel. Now you have Dynamite show up, and you see Scorpio Sky, this gorgeous man. I mean, hey, I can call a card. He's a very attractive man. Comes on there to wrestle Ben Carter. He's like, huh, I haven't watched wrestling since I was young. Let me check this out. And Ben Carter is like athletically gifted, amazing. That's going to draw you in. I'm hoping that's the first match, because that would be perfect. So hopefully we can get new people watching it from being on after the NBA. And being flexible. You know, TNT has to like that. AEW can be flexible and have products ready for them anytime.
Exactly. While we have the topic of the NBA, let's pour one out for our poor homies with the Los Angeles Clippers. Y'all just can't get it done. You just can't get it done.
So, like, it's only been 10 times, like, in league history that people have come back from 3-1 down to win the series. Doc Rivers has coached three of the teams that it's happened to.
I love that. I love that statistic so much.
Yeah. 30% of the times that this has happened in NBA history, Doc Rivers has been the coach.
You're such a good coach, but why does this keep happening?
How can you not make the adjustment to the adjustment or whatever the hell you got to do? But hey, shout out to Denver. Jamal Murray is a gamer. Jokic might be, next to Anthony Davis, one of the more unguardable players in NBA history. So they threw everything at him. He plays like a 45-year-old guy on, you know, at the lot. You know, that guy, that really old guy that just knows how to play basketball well. He's not fast anymore. He can't jump very high, but he just knows how to play the game. That's Jokic. I tip my hat to that man. I heard someone says he plays like the guy that plays in flip flops. So I shout out to him. But Lakers Clippers is what I heard all year. Me as a LeBron fan, I root for the Lakers, and we don't get it. So whatever.
Well, maybe next year.
Yeah, and Kawhi just needs to step his game up.
Yeah, and I can't even comment on, like, I made the comment about they blew it and they can't get it done. I cheer for the Detroit Lions. They were the kings of not getting it done. Like, 21-point lead and you still lose to fucking Mitch Trubisky. Patricia, you're a garbage coach and you're a fucking garbage GM hired you, and they both need to be fired. That's all I'll say on that matter. But now let's get into the AEW Dynamite preview for next week. Also, one other thing, since we talked about being the Elite, Eddie Kingston cutting a promo on a cookie.
It was like, if you, I think the whole VTE episode, this was a really good episode from front to back. I mean, because it had a lot of stories. It was funny. Plus, it, you know, put some stories going forward. I thought it was a really good episode. But if you just watch that first but few minutes where Eddie Kingston cuts a promo on a cookie, you realize this dude is as amazing as I say he is. And it was
I just can't say
he loved and hated the cookie at the same time. It was amazing.
he had the weirdest relationship with that cookie, but the way he talked about it, you couldn't stop listening to him talk about this cookie. I mean, it literally brought me back to when, like, Eric Bischoff was trying to get hired by WWE and they had him cut a promo about, like, trying to sell a mop. But this is 1,000 times better than that, because Eddie Kingston very much knows what this is, and he's just so good that he makes it so,
like, he looked almost
entertaining.
He looked bored before they asked him, and he just immediately went into character. And it's just like, when you talk about wrestlers being a different breed, I've seen this twice now. I saw Eddie Kingston just do it. And then Eddie Kingston do it on BTE, and then I saw Warhorse do it in front of me. It's the most impressive thing. They're like talking to you normal, they're a name person, and he's like getting to character, and then a snap of their finger, they are a completely different person, and it's amazing.
Yeah. But going into the preview for next week's AEW Dynamite, we'll have the tag team between Hikaru Shida, the AEW Women's Champion, versus the NWA Women's Champion Thunder Rosa versus Ivelisse and Diamante, who won the Women's Tag Team World Cup. We also have that six-man tag match between Lance Archer, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks versus Jon Moxley, Will Hobbs, and Darby Allin. Chris Jericho will be appearing live. And then, most interesting, Brody Lee versus Orange Cassidy, and that is very much a thing. It's like, what?
I've been calling for this for a while, and it's like I'm seeing ghosts or whatever, because I keep calling it. But, okay, with how hard they've been pushing Orange Cassidy, right? And how hard they've been pushing Brody Lee, and you probably want to save this match for later, maybe for the anniversary show, to make the anniversary show really big, this seems like the perfect time for a time limit draw.
Honestly, yeah. That's what I was going to say. I can't imagine, like,
like, Brody Lee just can't finish him, you know? And Orange Cassidy, he hits the Superman punch, does all his things, and they just keep kicking out. And it just seems like, the time limit remaining, this is the perfect time for that draw. Now, they never do it. Every time I call it, they never do it. So Brody Lee will probably just win, but
maybe because it's for the TNT Championship, they will do it, though. So that way, like, he still retains, and then at the same time, though, like,
yeah, it's like, just like,
it makes sense.
Yeah, it just seems like the perfect time, or maybe a double DQ with, I don't want, like, double DQs, but
I don't either.
I don't like it either, but with the whole Dark Order and the Best Friends all being involved, I could see it, or they might just pull the trigger on Orange Cassidy. I don't know, but I think the hottest act in AEW, people might disagree, but I think the hottest act on AEW, I'm talking about TV, internet, and everything, is the Dark Order. I don't think this is the right time to remove the belt from Brody Lee.
I don't as well. I think it's very much too early, and if you're going to wait till, like, Cody comes back, like, it's like Brody should still have the title by the time Cody comes back.
Yeah, and you want to start a longer type rivalry for the TNT title? Orange Cassidy, Brody Lee, go to a time limit draw. There you go.
Yeah. And that'll do it for this episode of All Things Elite. Thank you guys so much for joining us and for listening. Be sure to share the podcast with your friends and anybody who enjoys wrestling or AEW. Be sure that you're downloading the show on Google or Apple Podcasts. Again, shout out to our Spotify listeners. We never forget about you. And please leave a rating and review. You can also leave a donation through our podcast provider, Red Circle. And again, on social media, we are at AT Elite Pod, at Social Suplex, at SZoomer4, which is myself, and at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And as you can hear my dog, it possibly through my microphone. I don't know if you can or not, but she is going fucking mental. As my dog is going mental, there's nothing else for me to do but to let my good friend Floyd finish us off and take us home on this episode of All Things Elite. Thank you guys for listening. Floyd, take us home.
Today I'm going to leave us with three things. Be nice to each other, wear your mask, and social distance. And whether it's home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.